We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams and I am your host for this 7th of 7 episodes in a week about the Red Dwarf Smegazine. Today we're looking at Smegazine issue 14, the final Smegazine of the first volume, and joining me, as they have been for all 14 issues so far, first up is Colin Jackson Brown.
Hello.
And Carl Bryan.
One more and they're going to let us out. One more!
You say that, but we'll talk about that at the end.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, should we just do it? Because, you know, this is a really stupid idea. We've covered that, though, haven't we?
Yeah.
I just want to go on record and quote that you come up with these ideas and then about halfway through go, oh, I don't want to do it now. It's like, it's too late now, Mark.
I know. And the thing is, we could cut it if people didn't fucking listen, but they do listen, and I don't understand why, because...
Bastards.
Anyway, tar for listening. Love you. Right, let's do this. The front cover is a photo of Lister in a jacket, and you can win a Red Dwarf jacket. There's also extra stuff in the top right with a picture of Chris Barry about an article on Britus and a scary looking Mr. Flibble, and it says Mr. Flibble hits the bottle.
It does.
So your relationship with Mr. Flibble, Colin, didn't you? No, it wasn't Mr. Flibble that got you banned. It was Naked Rimmer, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was the basically sex issue.
Yeah, but I think that the first Mr. Flibble comic was more shocking than anything that was in that issue with Rimmer with his shirt off.
But that wasn't on the front cover, so Colin at the post office in Polesworth hadn't read that because he didn't read all of the things in there. He just looked at the covers and went, I'm probably not going to sell that to an 11-year-old.
When you said that, your relationship with Mr. Flibble, Colin's like, oh, here we go. Colin's going to say something salacious. Hello, biggest hits we've ever had.
I was young. I know better now.
So the editorial is kind of a contents page again, but it's an announcement of Volume 2, which... is basically next month, so there's not a break or anything like that, and it's going to have 8 more pages, apparently.
Nice and convenient that they did it in 14 issues, so there was 2. I think they knew that in the future there would be a podcast, even though they hadn't been invented yet, that would do the first 2 sections of Volume 1 over a week each. I think that's why they did it.
Do you think?
Almost certainly.
Maybe at the time they thought it was going to go on radio. Can you imagine us on national radio talking for an hour and a half a time about a magazine?
No one, neither can anyone else.
Oh, God.
I want to know. Local radio would probably snap it up.
We have to stop every so often to go, and now the weather.
Too hot.
Someone genuinely gave me a radio show about comic books for over a year, you know.
I know, I was on it.
It was a good show.
I know, it's fucking madness, isn't it? That I actually got broadcast and shit live.
It did mean that I managed to get Slayer collaborating with Atari Teenage Riot played on daytime radio, though.
Yep.
So it served its purpose.
Also in the editorial is an apology about getting the season 1 release date inaccurate.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
Not helping with my memory, this fucking magazine.
Yes. Last issue, we told you that Series 1 would be out on video on March the 1st. Well, by now, you probably realised that our info was, to put it mildly, a load of smeg.
I admire the honesty. They apologise better than the fucking Sun does. Ooh, a little bit of politics.
Fuck the Sun. twat.
Fuck the Sun.
That's the newspaper for any American listeners, not the actual star that our planet rotates around. That we're all right with. Although it's too fucking hot.
The Daily Star then for a second. We love the Daily Star.
The Daily Star is also a newspaper. Yeah. We're isolating our international friends here.
So there's a jacket competition. You're going to enter?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to, because it's for the deluxe one with the leather arms.
None of your non-deluxe tap here.
And I did my conversion malarkey thing, and £90 in 1993 is now a whopping £156 for inflation. That's I don't think I own any garment that's cost me £156.
No, that's mental.
At the time of recording today, I was looking for a pair of headphones because mine have broken. And I asked my friend, can you recommend me some headphones? And they sent me one and it was like 40 quid. And I was like, I'm not paying that. And then it finally dawned on me, I am tight. So looking at this and when it's like, oh yeah, the jacket's 90 quid. It's like, and it will stay on the shelf because I wouldn't go out in it because it cost me 90 quid. You know what I mean? It's
I once bought some limited edition Fallout 3 Vault 101 trainers, which I wore once and was like, these are too cool to wear and get all scuffed up. So have only been worn once and they cost me fucking loads, but not as much as 150, whatever that was.
It also goes to show that, because people are like, oh, the retro market these days, it's really expensive. It's like, no, it's just reckoned for inflation from back in the day.
Yeah. But the question was tough. Name the Red Dwarf costume designer. You can Google that now, but you couldn't Google it in 1993.
No, but if you've got a Red Dwarf video, you could look at the end of the episode.
Yeah, but effort
and find out that it was Howard Burden, who
it was.
Since then, has done. He did Doctor Who from 2012 to 2014, and he also did the really fucking freaky remake of Wurzel Gummidge.
Oh god,
where his face looks really scary, and he's apparently quite good. I've been told, but I've not watched it.
I've been told that, but Mackenzie Crook in it. It's just like, that's for kids, is it? Okay, that's. He looks weird.
Yeah.
Why did they remake Wurzel Gummidge?
Money.
That's your answer.
Good point. Yeah. Next up is Dwayne Dibley, the comic strip. It's called Out Part 1. And it's set in the Back to Reality world. And he's murdered Sebastian Doyle. I love that.
Well, that's a callback because he's in the previous, a few issues ago where he turned up. He was incarcerated for the murder of Sebastian Doyle because that's the end. In that reality, that was where they got the gun to all four of their heads.
Yeah.
So,
and again, not going into too deep a spoiler territory, but in a future strip, it's explained what happened.
And the artwork in this was fucking great again.
Yeah.
I really like the idea as well of Dwayne Dibley being haunted by the cat, because in Red Dwarf, there's a shadow of fear of the cat of Dwayne Dibley.
Yeah.
And I love that it works both ways in the comic strip. That's a really nice touch.
Yes.
And yeah. This did not pull its punches with its social commentary. Castration therapy, which is obviously a reference to conversion therapy, nice. And the police brutality was savage, and the police are stupid. It feels like this was written 5 minutes ago when we're looking at conversion therapy with the Tories trying to water it down and all the police shite that we've had to deal with in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, imagine a Britain where the people live in constant fear, where the government is proud to be called fascist. They ain't fucking far off.
I know, right? It's just great that there are people making this kind of level of social commentary about what is wrong with our world, way before I'd noticed and got upset and scared.
But it's not know? It's not great that this is 30 years ago and it's still the fucking same, if not a lot fucking worse.
I do think it's worse.
Yeah, definitely. You've also got in there, there's the little old lady talking to Dwayne Dibley saying, I've got a nuclear missile in my bag, you know, which is a direct steal from Jasper Carrot's Nutter on the Bus routine.
Yeah. Yes.
I like the fact there's the callback, the doctor who runs the home for the terminally bewildered is Dr. Caligari.
Yes.
As a big fan of the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, seeing that, and he's in black and white as well.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's quite a nice, that's a nerdy callback, but yeah. That's...
And it ends on a cliffhanger, and there he was as Jake Bullitt walks into the room. Which is pretty cool.
That twist was not expected, and I was like, that's really cool. I like that.
We'll get to that a bit more later on in the issue.
Yeah, we will. Next up is a Season 6 news special as part of the news page, and there's lots of stuff in there that we know now, we even discussed when we looked at Series 6, but at the time, damn, that would have been so juicy.
Yes.
And we've talked about in previous issues, like, oh, they went out of the way to avoid spoilers. On this one, they don't give a shit. They're just like, this one's this. Claire Grogan's coming back. You know, blood, this is happening. This is why Hattie Hayridge isn't in it. And it's like, okay. if they did this in, like, Doctor Who magazine now, they'd be like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
we are a lot more spoiler conscious these days than stuff was back then, unless you're the guy that plays the new Spider-Man,
Tom Holland,
because he apparently regularly gets told off for giving away major plot points in interviews and stuff.
He's adorably dopey.
Oh, I love Tom Holland.
The one thing that I did find interesting that I hadn't heard of about Series 6 was that they were making a making of video. I don't think I've seen that.
No. I think bits of it ended up in the Smegouts. No, Smegups, isn't it, that's mostly Series 6? Yeah.
I think they tried to do it a lot, because if you look at some of the documentaries on the DVDs, sometimes there's a lot of footage that have been, especially Series 7. I remember there being a lot of footage being shot at the time, like video diaries and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, back in, I remember this a lot. If people did video diaries for things and it was like left in the hands of the cast, it's phenomenally boring. So yeah. they just use snips and dribs and drabs. And I think that might have been the case here. It's like, yeah, unless you're shooting a really technical documentary about this, it's probably not going to be the most super interesting. thing. And of course Series 6 is where, you know, Grant and Naylor were probably having issues as well.
Yeah, so that may be partly why it didn't see the light of day. Yeah, good point.
I'm interested in this script that apparently they wrote called The Thursday Man that Steve Martin wanted to direct.
Yes, yeah.
Never happened, and neither did the Red Dwarf film.
No.
Well, unless you claim The Promised Land.
Which I've not seen.
No. Which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
I've got my own views on The Promised Land, but we'll wait till we get there. We'll wait till we get to The Promised Land.
Fuchsia.
Wait. Anything else that kind of caught your eye?
The ratings for Cyberzone are down. However, the ratings for the British Empire are going up, which is, it does get mentioned later on in this thing that it's becoming a beast, British, and I can imagine some of the Red Dwarf people were getting a bit nervous about this point, because it's like, oh my God, Chris has got this other show
that's and doing it's well.
Bigger. Yeah. And I get it, because Red Dwarf obviously had its solid fan base, but I don't think it was hitting Britis levels.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a mainstream sitcom. I mean, yeah, they got a bit nervous, and come Series 7, you kind of had a reason to, but I think it's interesting watching it, like it's getting on average 7 million people, and then but it's like, oh, it's dropped from 9 million. It's like, that's still really bloody good.
Yeah.
You know, and now Cyberzone's down to 2.5.
90s viewing figures are crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it was less competition, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
More of a captive audience. So yeah, as they'd alluded to in the little intro bit at the start, the Red Dwarf Series 1 videos have been put back to May the 4th. Although it then misquotes Star Wars by saying, "May the 4th go with you."
Yeah.
Which I don't know if they did that deliberately or not to annoy people. Or they just...
Either way, it's wonderful and pleased me immensely.
I think that's one of the earliest references in relation to science fiction that I've seen Star Wars Day, that I've seen May the 4th referred to as Star Wars Day. I did a bit of research on it, and apparently, unfortunately, one of the earliest May the 4th be with you was a newspaper headline in relation to Margaret Thatcher being elected.
Oof.
Which is horrible, because she's worse than fucking Palpatine and Darth Vader and all of them. So
they've done a good job of getting away from that.
Yeah.
Next up is the Robert Llewellyn interview part 2. And he talks about being sodomized by a rabbit. What?
It was the 90s, Mark.
It was on KYTV, although that bit was cut. I did go and find the episode that he was in, which coincidentally was the first episode of KYTV that came up when I did a search for it without knowing which episode he was in. It's the Telethon episode, which is the first episode of the second series.
Yeah. Did he get sodomized by a rabbit?
No, that bit was cut, but there is a bit where there is a guy in a rabbit suit standing right next to him, so that's obviously...
Yeah. I did have to laugh where he was like... Oh, he had to, the guy in the costume was exhausted. He had to do all the work. I just had to bend over, which was easy. It's like, well, we've all been there.
Also, moving on, he also talks about the reconstructed heart and something I hadn't heard of called Volvo to Vulva.
Yes, which was a sort of sequel to it, but they didn't film it. It was just a stage thing by the looks of it.
Also, we're skipping over a major thing here. Robert Llewellyn did Boone.
Yes, which I've not seen.
Yeah. He also did Loose Ends, which my mum really liked.
It's still on the air, isn't it, Loose Ends?
I know, but she always listened to Loose Ends, and it kind of warmed my heart that something I didn't know about my mum, that she listened to something with Craig Charles and Robert Llewellyn in, probably around the same time as I was watching Red Dwarf, and didn't know, and neither did I, that we were both
watching the same
into the same actors, which is really cool.
That is nice.
Yeah.
Also, the Boone theme song is a classic.
I mean, it is, yes. You can't ignore the Boone theme song.
Yeah. He also mentions the episode of Bottom he's in, which is still a really good episode.
He's great in Bottom.
Yeah. Which, I don't remember his episode. What does he do in that?
He's the old soldier with the false leg.
Yeah.
He's got a really intricate wooden carved false leg. It was like, I was hand carved by naked Amazon maidens. Like, how do you know they were naked? Oh, because I watched them do it.
That rings a bell. Yeah. I like the bit where he's talking about he gets recognised on the tube and somebody recognises him from his mannerisms, which makes me think that he must walk in a very sort of robot-like way, just normally.
Yeah. I didn't realise he did a book of the Reconstructed Heart. I thought it was just a stage show.
Yeah, I've seen the book for sale on eBay. I've not bought it, but I've seen it.
He did another book as well, which I don't think was out by this point. It was something like his autobiography, and I think it was something like...
The Man in the Rubber Mask.
Man in the Rubber Mask, yeah.
No, there was another one. Long Haired and something or other.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's one about his early years. I can't remember what that's called now.
Right, because I've got The Man in the Rubber Mask.
Yeah. Yeah, because he did an updated version and I found it for us, didn't I?
Yes.
I'll have to have a look, see if I can find that.
I've got it. Thin He Was and Filthy Haired. I've just looked it up. Memoirs of a Bad Boy.
Not the words I'd say when I think of Robert Llewellyn, but yeah. It is interesting that, because we talked about how Chris Barry went on to do Britis, and Craig Charles is doing Cyberzone, and Danny John Jules is doing Maid Marian. Robert Llewellyn kind of gets almost forgotten, but he's doing a lot of stage stuff.
Yes.
And it's stuff he's doing himself as well, which is quite interesting. He's a playwright.
It's stuff that's in the moment and was live but wasn't recorded, which is why it doesn't get thought about as much these days, sadly.
Don't worry, we've got Scrap Heap Challenge on the specials list.
Hell yeah. I like the fact they were talking about he didn't make the convention because he was doing Parallel 9.
Yes. Yes, because they watched it at the convention.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, now I'm proper going to go geeky here. The thing is with Parallel 9, right, is they did one series which was actually quite... It had a sci-fi plot, and it was actually quite serious.
There were a couple of them. They did totally change. I mean, Makeda, the main dude, was a completely different actor.
Got the guy from, was it Cuthbert Lilly, who was in Zap or whatever.
Yes,
he was a very silly rubber-faced man. But on the first one, he was a prisoner, and he was only released every Saturday morning. For crimes against the Space and Time Committee
which is actually exactly the same situation that that Sarah Green had. She was only released every Saturday morning for her crimes to be on Going Live.
Also, Robert Llewellyn's adamant he'd be good in El Dorado. So.
Which very much dates the interview to the, what, 6 months where that was on the air?
Somebody did a documentary thing on YouTube about just how bad it was. And I love stuff like that. It's fascinating to see, my God, it was crap, wasn't it? But at the time, they're like, this is it, folks. This is the future of the BBC. EastEnders is dead. It's all El Dorado now.
Quite. Next up is The Cantabellis Tales, a comic strip. And I loved this, but I like Chaucer. How many Red Dwarf fans are also Chaucer fans? Who was this for other than me?
I think this was just for you, Mark.
Well, no, I got it now. I would not have done at the time. I was in a youth... No, it wasn't a youth. It was a local amateur theatre group in Tamworth called the Sandyback Theatre Group. And the last production I did with them was The Canterbury Tales.
Wonderful.
But I left very soon after that because I was having a bit of a laugh while we were doing there and got told that we're not here to have fun by one of the sort of main actory people. And my thoughts were, well, you're not winning any fucking Oscars, so what are you here for then? So I left. But Canterbury Tales, this is a really good comic. It's got great art again. Alan Burrows did the art on this one.
It's got a very sweet ending as well, I thought. So I was like, where is this going? And I was like, who are they eventually? I thought it was going to be in the same way they did the Robert Maxwell thing a couple of issues ago.
Yeah.
But, oh, this is going to be somebody silly. And then when it's revealed, it's like, oh, that's actually really quite... Because had he just died?
Yeah, so for context for people that haven't read it, which will be most people, the story is about it's a ship that basically is full of people who have died on a journey, and it was a pilgrim ship where they were all going to meet their gods. But it turned out that all of their gods individually were completely different ones that they thought they were going to see, including one person says that their god is Rodney Bewes, as in Bob from the Likely Lads, which was last shown in 1974, which was when it was on the TV at the time. So there are a few sort of really, really dated references in this. Like there's John Noakes gets mentioned, who retired from TV nearly 20 years before this. But it turns out at the end that the actual god that they were going to visit was Sir Clive Sinclair, which is fucking lovely. I really loved that because I was a Spectrum kid. Fuck the Commodore 64. Clive Sinclair's supremacy.
But the thing about this was that felt weighty as a comic strip, which I haven't seen in any of the comic strips previously. I kind of thought it looked and read, because it had tiny little panels and it had lots and lots of text, it looked and read like an Alan Moore comic book, yes, which we've not seen before.
I feel that this was brought to the Smegazine as an idea rather than they had the idea to do it.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think whoever the people who are behind this have gone, look, we want to do this. It seems timely. Obviously, Sir Clive Sinclair, you know, passed away, and I think our readership will appreciate it. And they've gone, sure. Part of me does think this magazine goes like, how many pages will it fill? You know,
but, quite a long.
Yeah, 5 pages. Also, if you look in the credits at the beginning, they put thanks out to Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yes.
In the writer's thing. Also Woody Allen, which I'm not quite sure why that is.
Can I just point out, no, Clive Sinclair had not just died.
Oh.
He died last year, 16th of September 2021. I thought it was recently.
That's weird. Yeah.
So, no, he was still alive and well at the time that this came out for another nearly 30 years.
I mean, I didn't know that. Otherwise, I would have pointed it out. I thought
he passed away.
But... I remember he died 16th of September last year, 2021, because I definitely remember putting something on Facebook at the time saying I had a Spectrum as a kid. It was the first game system I had. What a fucking legend.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you spotted that, because otherwise we'd look like right fucking idiots who hadn't done our research. I've literally read the Smegazine and done fuck all else. We had to do 7 in a week, and we recorded them so soon to each other that it was just really stressful. I lied. I talked about how the comics were in the last issue, the one that was about Lister doing something and causing a monster to exist, was very on brand. Mm. I kind of felt like the poking fun at religion thing was very on brand for Red Dwarf as well.
Definitely.
I like the fact there's a large panel showing when the fight kicked out, which presumably is what killed everybody.
Yeah.
It's showing all the different people. I'm pretty sure in there's pictures of the artists, because there's a full range of people. And there just is someone in the background who's got a flag that just says wank on it.
They have. I've only just noticed that. Yes. Mm. There's also a guy that looks very much like Weird Al Yankovic with a pint near the front.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's one of the writers or one of the artists. Or there's everybody looking like spanning across time and different cultures and all sorts. There's someone in a turban. There's someone who looks like they walked out of Blackadder the Third. There's a French chef. There's all sorts in there. It's very weird, but very good. The ship design as well is quite nice. I like the ship design on it.
It's a bit Geiger-ish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next up is an ad, and it is for Batman Monthly, which is going to have free postcards and a key ring in its first 2 issues. And later on in the issue is another ad. This one is for 2000 AD, and they're going to have free scan cards, stickers, and a writer's kit.
Yeah, 99p for the Batman comic. And that's like all, you know, 52-page comic for 99p, and you get badges and stuff. It's like, that's great. Like, look at comics now. That's nothing. That's nowhere near.
And I can't believe that the next bit wasn't on the Series 6 news bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, the Series 6 shock report?
Yes.
It was really odd. It was cool artwork and then a load of random lies about Series 6.
Yeah, they were announcing that a lot of it was going to be animated and in a quite cute kids drawing animated style. And then they point out that it's the April Fool's thing because it's the April issue of the magazine.
It's quite weird that it's 15 pages in.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me, you know, when people say on social media, no spoilers, please. And then the oh so witty friends always reply with blah, blah, blah. That's this completely obvious thing that doesn't happen. Lol. It kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
But that hasn't happened. I know you do. And it's not witty. It's cack.
I know,
the thing that I liked about this is looking at it is like, yeah, Red Dwarf cartoon might have worked, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, I love a Red Dwarf cartoon. Sign me up.
Yeah. Why Rimmer's got a baseball cap on, though, I'm not too sure.
Well, that's a bit of a Red Dwarf USA thing, isn't it? Because
yeah.
The cat is female in that as well. And there's a sort of almost the real Ghostbusters sort of styled version of the polymorph on the other picture.
I like how Lister's drawn. I think that's quite good.
Oh, the artwork's great, yeah.
Yeah.
Next up is androids. Meh.
That's exactly what my note says. Honestly, it says androids. Meh.
Mine too.
I liked it purely because at one point it gets really... Because this is where I realise that I started reading it at the beginning of volume 2.
Yeah.
Because this is actually building up to what happens in the strip in the first one of volume 2, which I remember quite well. And the fact that there's the joke, again, talking about the balance between, is it for kids, is it not for kids? When two of the androids decide to get in the back of a car where they previously have had an affair, it's a car called a Ford Phallus.
Yeah.
And then it was like, do you remember when I showed you my fuel injection system? Yeah, I can still see the oil stains. It's like, right, yep. Okay. And then it goes fully soap at the end with the missing father who's been in the jungles for 20 years with amnesia. After the baddie tried to kill him in a mysterious plane crash, it's like, I love this. It's so silly and it's blatantly a soap opera parody, and I love that crap. It's not great, admittedly, but I love it.
Next up is Empire Building, which is an article about Chris Barry and the Britas Empire, and Chris Barry calling the press bullshit. I wasn't ready for that.
Calling the press bullshit to the press.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was great. I was stunned. And yeah, he didn't pull his punches. And I kind of like that.
The only bit I really got out of this article was I thought it was interesting where they were describing the rehearsal situation that they had, and seemingly lots of other sitcoms had as well, because they see the bloke that plays Rene Artois on his way out, so they've obviously just been doing a low hello at the same time in there.
Yeah, I also find it quite interesting where they were talking about how the BBC were like, oh yeah, no, we'll get actors like, you know, who are in The Good Life and Hello Hello and that kind of generation. They're like, no, we want young actors for this. Because I think it probably would have died on its arse if it was with an older generation of...
Yeah, definitely. But I also, at the same time, think it's really weird thinking of Chris Barry as the younger generation. Because when we were watching this, I was 11, so he seemed really old.
I like that they bring up to him the sex symbol thing, and he gets embarrassed. And it's like, oh, I don't know anything about that. And it's like, yeah. And there's like, Chris Barry was sexy, not as British, but yeah. Chris Barry, when his website used to have the pictures of him with his muscles, it's like, yeah. Chris Barry was actually a bit of a sex symbol in the 90s.
Well, you remember that issue cover that we've talked about that got Colin banned from seeing any more issues?
Yeah.
Well, I actually printed that out to read it, and my boyfriend saw the front cover and was like, oh, Chris Barry used to be dishy. I'm like, yeah, but he's old now, so you've just fancy me. You don't fancy anyone else. I'm completely not completely secure. I'm not intimidated by how attractive Chris Barry is. Fuck.
Yeah, man, in Trimmy's face going, if you leave me for Chris Barry.
But no, he clearly had something going on.
So if Pete's working on a time machine now.
It's when he's talking about at the end of the article as well. He's like, oh, we know, we're probably going to make it past the third series. You know, I think it can be a bad thing if something runs forever and ever. And I'm like, didn't they kill him off and then bring him back again because of that? And it went on for about 9 series.
I think it was 7, but I get your point.
I think I remember him being killed and coming back, yeah.
Yeah, because they were originally going to end it, and they're like, oh, no, don't end it. But it's like, but we just killed him. Like, no, bring him back.
I think there was a Christmas special set in the future, but that
yes.
year has gone now. So it was set in the future at the time, but we've passed the year that was the future year. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It buggered up the continuity, didn't it? Because it was like, okay, this is an episode set in the future. And then when the actual series came to an end and it was revealed what was going on, it's like, well, none of that happened then, did it? It's really weird. Yeah.
Incidentally, why the fuck is my hoverboard?
Well, hoverboards have been invented, but they're those shit Segway thingies that don't fucking hover.
True. Next up is Mr. Flibble gets pissed. And my notes just read, what the actual fuck?
Well, I mean, it doesn't say that, does it? It says, Mr. Flibble gets P-censored ED. So there's many things that could be. It might not be pissed. Permed, pasted, phoned, pulled, punted, poured, pulled, popped, pooped, peeved, pimped, pelted, pre-med, or pegged.
You're a prick. It's clearly pissed, isn't it?
I think it probably is.
I just like that it says on the side of his spaceship, the amusing misadventures of Mr. Flibble.
Yes.
The artwork is crazy and I love it. And yeah. The bit where he gets clubbed from behind and leaves his beak and eyes behind, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Love that panel.
There's nipples in this. There's when he fantasizes what basically he gets a note saying, come and meet me out the back alone, kiss, kiss, heart, heart. And he imagines a woman, and it's a woman with large breasts with very protruding nipples, Mark.
This is true.
I mean, yeah.
And then it's revealed to be, I'm guessing, a gelf that looks like a woman, but the eyes are in the breasts.
Yes, they're protruding eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit Total Recall, isn't it?
And of course the classic, a bag of swag will come in a bag marked swag.
Yes.
It's not swag if it's not in a bag marked swag.
Well, that's true.
Indeed.
Did you like this? Because I genuinely don't know if I did. I don't think I disliked it.
I liked the art, but I thought the story was a bit... yeah, fair enough. But...
Yeah,
I think it's because I know there's other ones coming that are better.
Exactly that. The artwork is brilliant. The colouring is beautiful. It's really nice and bright colours. But, yeah, there's not much of a story to it at all, is there?
And there's barely any dialogue. Well, any dialogue there is, like, Flibble just swears. And then the bit I did like is he wrings somebody's neck who won't stop talking to him, and that person walks off and... Before they were just saying blah, 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 and now they're just saying MF, 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 which is probably a bit of a sly joke.
Yeah.
That they thought, I think it's one of those jokes like, no one's going to figure that out. It's like, yeah, they will.
Yeah, they will. Next up is, read any good books lately? And unnecessary dig at wrestling fans, I thought.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, wrestling's... done a lot of good for me. And, you know...
It does say American wrestling fans.
Well, yeah, but still. I didn't feel like it was necessary to just randomly attack wrestling fans.
But it's about choose your own adventure books.
Which I do like.
Which, up until Saturday, when it was my daughter's birthday, I didn't think they still existed. And she got one for her birthday.
What did she get?
It's Mermaid Island. So we've not read it yet, but it's a new one that was first published in 2020. But it's got the proper Choose Your Own Adventure logo bit at the top. And yeah, I'm very excited to read that with her pretty soon.
Fighting Fantasy had a brief renaissance, didn't it, where they reprinted quite a few of the originals
years back. I may end up getting a load of the old ones off eBay if they're not too expensive, because we recently got all of the... do you remember the Usborne Puzzle Adventure books?
They were brilliant.
We now have all of them, because we've been going through...
The Intergalactic Bus Trip was one, wasn't it?
Yes. That's the first one that I read with Elodie this year, because I'd still got it. There was about six or seven that I'd still got from when I was a kid, and then I've systematically gone through and bought the rest of them off eBay, and they're great.
I kept seeing a YouTuber I follow, they were talking about they were re-releasing a book. They hadn't written this book, but it was a book they grew up with, and they got the rights to it, and they decided to update and re-release it. And it was a book, I think it was called like Games You Can Play in Your Head on Your Own.
I think I've heard of that.
And it's like, it gives you the setup. It's almost like Dungeons and Dragons, where it gives you the setup and then you use your imagination to go from there. And apparently it's really, really good. But I remember that initially was what I thought this was talking about, with this type of book. But then it's like, oh no, it's Choose Your Own Adventure. Because I remember the Nightmare novels, the ones that used to come out along with the TV
show.
They
were great.
And the first half was a novel, which I never read. And I literally just got them just for the Choose Your Own Adventure bit. And I think I managed, my record was getting killed from the first move. Like, go left, you've been eaten by a giant spider. It's like, right.
I mean, this has inspired a lot of love for the three of us for Choose Your Own Adventure style books, but none of the books we've discussed are actually in the article. There was one that I'd never heard of and one that I'd only really slightly touched on called part of the Time Machine books. I've read the Time Machine books. Have either of you actually read either of the books in the article?
No, neither of those.
I haven't, no.
The Time Machine series were quite fun. They were a little bit kind of lower key than Choose Your Own Adventure and Fighting Fantasy, but I did read them because I was really into that kind of book.
Cool.
Next up is Ace of Black Hearts, a comic strip, and so 90s with its Quantum Leap reference.
I really didn't like the artwork on this one.
No?
The colouring's nice, but when you've got the different dimension versions of Lister and Crichton appearing, and then when Ace takes his sunglasses off, they're completely unrecognisable.
Mm.
They don't look anything like they're supposed to. And I find that really jarring. The story's all right, but just the art was just a bit cack.
I thought as well, with it going a bit more adult, some of the actual... The thing of, obviously, he's going through the different dimensions. This would have been the Ace Rimmer TV show, is him going and meeting a different... It'd be an anthology series where he meets a different Rimmer and a different rest of the crew. And this one would have been probably a series finale, maybe a two-parter of him meeting one who happens to be a homicidal maniac. And, he's a homicidal maniac and like a space... For some reason, the only word I could think of then was space bastard.
That works. Yeah. We'll go with that. Now I need to form another band. Space Bastard.
Space Bastard.
It's an amazing band name. I'm having that.
One thing I thought that was quite fun is someone actually smoked him a kipper.
Yes. I did like that.
I liked that.
Final panel, but he'd already gone.
Next up is Holograms, which is the same, and I quite liked that there was some shade on someone's spelling and people pointing out continuity errors. I thought, I quite liked that they put their they got their claws out for that.
It was that person being all pedantic about the English language, and he spelt dwarf WALF.
So, I know, right? I loved that.
Genius.
Next up is Corridors, Consoles and Cockpits, which is the Mel Bibby interview.
Yes.
And what a diplomatic and generous, modest, interesting and likable fellow this bloke is.
He was. He was lovely. Yeah, the bit where he's talking about he was initially asked to be the set designer right from the first episode but couldn't do it, because he was doing another series at the time. That was Filthy Rich and Catflap that he was working on at the time, which he mentions later on, but doesn't connect the two together.
It's a good set as well on Filthy Rich and Catflap.
I've never seen Filthy Rich and Catflap. He did the sets for that and Morris Minor's Marvelous Motors. And Cheggers plays Pop, and it's a knockout as well. And Cyberzone, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, of course.
This is the thing that I do like about this is the more and more we hear about sort of the crew and stuff, it really feels like, in the same way, like if a chef will move to a different restaurant, they'll take their sous chef with them or yeah. something like that. If somebody if somebody moves on to another thing, they'll ring Peter Ragg or they'll ring Mel Bibby and go, can you come work on this?
Yeah.
Because you've got your crew and you know what, I've got the best one. Why would I not take them with me?
Yeah, absolutely. There's also, there's one thing in this interview that absolutely made me go, what? The set for Back to Reality was the same set as Holoship, but they just repainted it and added more things to it. Which those two sets look completely different.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me because of knowing someone who worked on Red Dwarf in the design department and him telling me about how they built sets and reusing of sets. Hearing Mel Bibby like talk about, oh yeah, we just repainted that. They still do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very effective way of saving money.
I just found the whole article fascinating.
Yeah, and yes.
Their shoestring budget once again comes out here. Sets made from scavenged polystyrene. Come on.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he actually thought about why the sleeping quarters in Series 3 looks different.
Yeah. Yeah, he got his own headcanon backstory type thing that totally works.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And it would make sense if, like, the three of us were on a spaceship 3 million years in space. It's like, well, I'm moving to the nicest apartment in the thing. Don't get me wrong. The thing that obviously is a bit weird is, you know, we could all take a room each. No. We're still bunking together.
Yes.
You know, but, yeah, we're moving to the nicer quarters. But he talks like, oh, he went skip diving in Shepperton, and he found a motorbike that had just been left rusted there for like 10 years. And they just put it on the set as part of the rusted one in Demons and Angels.
Yes. They obviously don't empty their skips very often.
No. That's the thing, isn't it? It's, you know, I remember it's in one of the documentaries for the first series where I think it's, what's her name? Donna. I can't remember her last name right now, but she's there going and finding stuff that's got colour in it and just chucking it on the set to give it a bit of colour. You know, it's, you just build it with what you can. Like, a friend of mine was shooting a short film, same lad who ended up working on Red Dwarf, actually, and he wanted to build out of a black cab, like a guy going around looking for aliens. So it had, like, you know, the spinning dish with the antenna on and all this. Yeah. I was like, oh, where'd you get all this from? It's like this leftover stuff from other TV shows. So there was like a panel from Torchwood. There was this from that. There was this from the other. Probably can't say that he did this, but it was about a decade ago now. It's fine.
I loved this article. It was genuinely fascinating. And I want to be friends with Mel Bibby. He sounds like a nice bloke.
Yeah. Sadly, he died about 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's in series 7. He gets the Femel credit. I can't remember which episode it is, but yeah, he passed away like halfway through series 7 because he's in the documentary. It's the duct soup. There's footage of him in like the making of like building it in the car park and stuff like that. And I think he passed away either just afterwards before it got transmitted or during. And so there's a tribute to him. Mm. I think it's during Duck Soup.
Yeah.
Sad. Mm. Next up is Jake Bullitt and the Case of the Casting Contestant, Part 5, At Home with the Nerds. I am so glad that this has done what it's done. And we've always said that it's great, but we want more of it. Mm. I did not spot the twist. Yeah. And I loved it. What a lovely idea.
So, yeah, the final panel of this particular Jake Bullitt strip is the exact same one as the final panel in the Dwayne Dibley one, because it's the two comics converging, and in the next issue, they're going to be together. And I love it when stuff does that.
That's really clever. I'm really excited for it.
The Dwarf Extended Universe.
Well, this is it. The third series of League of Gentlemen did a similar thing where all of the episodes were happening at the same time. And there was somebody getting run over by a van with a plastic bag blown in the way. And you could see how different characters had influenced what was happening. And this is a similar kind of thing. And it's brilliant. I love it. It does what I'm sure they intended to by it makes me really look forward to getting the next issue and reading that whenever the hell it is that we're going to be recording that.
I mean, when I complained about this on the last episode covering the last issue, it felt weird because I'd read this as well. And I knew that I was actually excited about this comic strip, but I tried to kind of like present how I felt when I actually read it on the last episode, if that makes sense.
Yeah, how you would have read it at the time. You've got another month to wait until this happened.
Yeah, as opposed to reading the two comics for a recording where we're doing two issues in one. So, I'm so excited for this now after pretending I wasn't 2 hours ago in our time. And yeah, this is great. Superb. Next up is the Kachansky profile. And I guess compared to the others, there's actually some stuff in it that you might need reminding of.
It's another one, like I said yesterday with the polymorph one. It's a character who, if you total up all of the screen time that she'd had at that point, it's probably only 10 minutes at most at that point, five series of the program. So because of that, it seems so much fresher. Also, I've really liked the bit where it said musical tastes. Rumoured to have a liking for 20th century pop band Altered Images.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that was naughty, that.
I like that. That was good. Because old Altered Images was great.
The thing as well in this is it kind of falls into that, did they go out, didn't they go out, which they didn't really finish establishing until, I think it's series 6, where they actually went, yes, they did.
There's really ambiguous continuity on it, isn't there?
Yeah. I think it's 6 and 7 where they finally nail it down, like, yes, they did go out, and yeah. Also, just from looking at this picture, maybe it's been a long day. But we're looking at it going, oh, Claire Grogan was beautiful, wasn't she? Still is, but...
I was going to say, still is.
Yeah, but it just, the Kachansky thing is like, yeah, she really does look beautiful in this. Not Chris Barry levels, but still beautiful.
Next up is the Smegazine quiz, but it's actually an ad for the new Smegazine coming next month with, as we've established, more pages and stuff. And we're going to see some Series 6 news, the Dwayne, Dibley and Jake Bullock comic, a strip called List of the God, interviews with Craig Charles and Mac McDonald. I'm really excited for Mac McDonald. I'm really excited for Dwayne and Bullock. And List of the God sounds like it might have cat people in. So all in all, gimme.
I like the fact they still had to make a point of going, Craig, Lister, Charles.
Who's buying this that doesn't know Craig Charles?
Exactly.
But yeah, it's the beginning of an epic new comic strip, List of the God. So that could be a one that goes for quite a few issues at least.
I remember it. It's very good.
Awesome.
So that is the end of Volume 1 of the Smegazine. But before we decide what we're doing, tell me your favourite of this issue, Carl.
I think for me, I really enjoyed the interview with Mel Bibby. And actually, as a second, I agree with Colin that the art's not as good as it could be, but I really enjoyed the story of the Ace Rimmer cartoon. Cool. But yeah, Mel Bibby, definitely, just because it's interesting seeing, again, coming from a media background, seeing the, we haven't got any money, this is how we did it. I love that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely that.
Yourself, Colin?
This is a really strong issue. There's a lot of competition. I loved the Dwayne Dibley and Jake Bullitt strips converge together. But I think overall, my favourite is the Canterbliss Tales.
For me, I've actually written all the comics except Androids.
Fair.
But I think if I had to, I'd pick the Dwayne Dibley, because it was just the savagery of its political jibes really resonated with me.
Yeah.
What about your worst then, Carl?
Oh, I'd probably say it might actually be the Kachansky thing, because it, like I say, this is, and it's not that that was bad. Oh, actually, no. Holograms. Holograms is pretty much nothing. If it's, again, it's a very strong issue, so I'm going with Holograms. It's the weakest thing, definitely.
Then, Colin?
I had neglected to write anything down for my least favourite, so I'm just looking through it now. I reckon probably the April Fool, to be honest. The Series 6 shock report.
The artwork saved that for me.
That's fair.
For me, it's Androids. I'm so bored of it. So, we have come to the end of our run of Volume 1 of this magazines. And so we've only got 9 issues of Volume 2. Do we split it into a five-day run and then a 4-day run? Or do we do all 9 in one go?
Let's do all 9. Fuck it.
Death or glory.
We'll probably record it in loads of batches over about an 8-year period. But when we put them out, let's put them out in 9.
Right, let's try and do it better next time. But all right, we'll do 9 in a row. 9 episodes in 9 days. Fuck my life. I don't want to edit 9 episodes of anything ever.
Stop whining.
Fuck. Yeah. Right, I suppose, seeing as this is the end of the week, we should actually plug our shit. So, Colin, plug your shit.
Okay, so other than this, I have 2 other podcasts. I have Free With This Month's Issue, which is me and my friend Ian, plus a different guest each month. Both of my wonderful colleagues here have also been on the episodes as guests. And basically, each month we get an old free CD from Kerrang, Metal Hammer, Enemy, Q, that kind of thing, all the old music magazines, and listen to it and find the various horrors and delights within. And my other podcast is me and Ian again, plus our friend Tracy. It's called We Dig Music, and at the moment we are going through every year since the 60s in a completely random order to decide which is the best music from each of those years. So we pick a random year, we each choose 10 songs, we vote on them in secret, and then we argue over the results because we find them out as we record it live on air. And it's a lot of fun. And you can find both of them. They're both on the We Made This Network. You can find both of them on my website, which is WeDigPodcast.com. And you can obviously find them by searching in wherever you get your podcasts for We Dig Music and for Free With This Month's Issue.
Carl, plug your shit.
I'll be hosting Shipwrecked and Comatose After Dark on the We Made This OnlyFans starting in July. Which will be me just talking about how I'd recast the US pilot, but just in sexy underwear.
What?
Also, I'm taking over a lot of the podcasts that Mark has decided to put to the side, so get ready for Geek Polymath, Ink Stories, and also I'll be hosting Aunt Nell, which is about Polari, which, even though I have no idea about any of it, and I'm not a homosexual, I will be going into great detail about.
What the actual fuck?
I haven't got anything much going on at the moment, so yeah.
No shit.
Just follow me on TikTok at I Am Mr. Carl, or on Instagram or Twitter, and I will hopefully be doing something soon. But in the meantime, yes, do check me out on the We Made This OnlyFans. Tony doesn't talk about it much, but that's because it's just me on there, really. I've tried to get Colin on it, and he's just not going for it.
What's wrong with you?
So much, Mark.
I know, right? All of us. Oh, do you know, I'm going to sound like a dickhead now, because I did cut all those podcasts. I've got two other podcasts I'm doing at the moment. Right in the Childhood, which is about kids' TV. That's at RITCpod on Twitter. And Chucky Vision, which is about the Chucky and Child's Play franchise. And that's surprisingly popular. Right in the Childhood is not. Chucky Vision is at Chucky Vision on Twitter as well.
I've just been on it as well.
And me.
I know.
For all of the, obviously, Danny John Jules fans, I've just recorded an episode of Right in the Childhood about Maid Marian and Merry Men, which Danny John Jules was also in. So everyone should listen to that as well. There you go. That'll boost.
Yeah, well, that's actually coming out roughly the same time as this episode is as good. Well. So check it out at RITCpod. At RITCpod. At RITCpod.
Word to your
Maybe
mother.
Not. Yeah. So thank you for joining us for 7 days with 7 issues of this magazine. Until next time.
See, I know what kind of day it's been when Colin was like, yes, both of you have been on my podcast. And I actually sat there going, have I?
You definitely have. I listened to it.
Yeah. Forgetting what podcasts I've been on. I updated my Podchaser the other day as well.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Why? Why do you even need to bring that up? Mm. You don't. We've done a story, and you're just using that for the. God. No, it's like, no. I don't get it. I understand yeah. I understand Soongs. Soongs are always going to be in some way related to the Kang story because of genetics and the stuff like that that they've done. I get it, but. To do that, and if it comes in season 3, if it's a main thing in season 3, then I'll hold judgment. If it doesn't get mentioned in season 3, then what was the point?
Pick a disc.
Guardian reading lefty, which
a bleeding heart is one of the phrases we use a lot here in the US. Like, he cares about the homeless.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shifting into my Limbo impersonation. Oh, he wants to house the homeless. What is he, a communist? Like, you know, that's not... maybe a little. but he's concerned with this. He's concerned with climate change. He's concerned with poverty. He's concerned with just general treatment of your fellow human beings. Like, I'm sure he resents having been subjected to trauma in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives him a great deal of sympathy, which I think is a good quality.
Third one, are the following names of hops, US space shuttles, or both?
Brilliant.
First one, Atlantis.
No, it's a US space shuttle, but is it a hop? I'm going to say it's just a US space shuttle.
Correct.
Good.
I've
got to get best of three again.
I didn't know that was a space shuttle. Well, that's my poor knowledge, that is. second one, Galaxy.
I know that that's a hop because I've seen it in a pub recently. I don't know if it's a space shuttle, so I'm going to say both.
Just a hop, that one.
Oh, damn it.
Next one, Endeavour.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.